case this morning, Sandra Diaz versus the Commissioner of Social Security. And Mr. Duncan, if you would just hold up 1 minute till we can be sure we have Ms. Kuschick on Zoom. And it looks like she's there. Can you hear me, counsel?
Yes, I can hear you.
All right, great. Thank you. Then we can begin.
Thank you,
Mr. Duncan.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, Dana Duncan on behalf of Sandra Renee Diaz. The history of this case would probably take up most of my allotted time, but the key issue in this is the only issue before the court, which is whether the administrative law judge, Judge Parker, and while I usually use a generic ALJ, considering she's the fourth ALJ to be involved in this case, I will refer to her by name. In her decision of March 9th, 2021, whether she adequately weighed the opinion of Dr. Manos. Now, this case falls under the old rule. The new medical opinion rule was established effective March 27th of 2017. So that's how old this thing is. This goes back to the original rule, which was step one was if it was a treating physician controlling weight. And then the second part of this, which is under, because this is an SSI case, 20 CFR 416.927 sub C sub 1, which is significant weight to be afforded to an examining physician. Dr. Manos found two significant things. One, she was intolerant of routine work stress, and two, she had marked interactions with supervisors and coworkers. Ms. Diaz testified at hearing about stress and her difficulty in dealing with coworkers, having situations where she indicated she would probably walk off the job if criticized by a supervisor. She also had a diagnosis of borderline personality disorder, which is by itself a condition that seems to trigger such responses that are not normally acceptable within a work environment.
So Mr. Duncan, let me ask you this. We've narrowed this case down, if it's possible to say that, to this closed period, because
correct,
she is getting her benefits after a certain date. And I understood the administrative law judge to be weighing Dr. Manos's opinions, which are, you know, are pretty serious opinions,
yes,
as against her responsiveness to treatment when she was able to stay on treatment at the time.
Yes.
And I'm concerned about how much we're supposed to reweigh this. Your basic point seems to be one that I'm actually fairly sympathetic to, which is when you're dealing with mental illness, the inputs that the trained psychologist or the trained whoever it is are going to be using are her accounts of what
correct,
she's experiencing. So it's a little hard to criticize the subjective inputs, but it is possible to say, you know, is she really this limited if she's able to respond during that closed period of time that we're talking about to treatment?
Well, this is a fundamental point. This is one that Magistrate Jeff or just Judge Duffin said in his first decision, which is, yes, you've established that she has improvement in her bipolar, but you've not established that she still would not have significant problems dealing with routine work stress. The two do not go hand in hand. He implied that you really should have gotten a medical opinion on that fact. I mean, after all, Dr. Manos was brought into this case because of a lack of any significant mental records, and that's why he was brought in.
Right, and he only examines her once, though, right? He is an examining
correct,
physician, but only once.
Yeah. Correct. And what I can do, and I would, when I was reviewing in preparation today, I forgot to look at a thing called the Green Book, which Social Security publishes, which is the instructive manual for consultative examiners. And I will provide the citation to that as a supplemental after oral argument. But he complied with the Green Book, which says you are basing your decision when we order one, it's because there's a lack of evidence. So then turning around and saying, well, there, it's not supported because there isn't enough evidence in the file to support the opinion is begging the question, because that's why the judge or why the consultative exam was ordered. The second part of that is it specifically outlines that you're supposed to have a mental status examination and observations, which are the key components of your opinion. Okay, so that's what he did. And then to say that it's just subjective statements does not, again, provide any justifiable situation.
Forgive me, Mr. Duncan.
Yes, Judge.
How do we deal with this situation? In October of 2010, Ms. Diaz told Dr. Manis that she had stopped treatment and run out of medications in the spring because she had lost health insurance and her psychiatric symptoms were back and she was depressed. But in September and November of that year, she told her primary care physician that her bipolar disorder was well controlled.
Correct.
How do we deal with that?
It's very simple, Your Honor. What we have here are multiple medical conditions. We have nothing in the record that says any medication she was taking could have dealt with her borderline personality disorder, which is part of the whole basis and a key portion of why she cannot deal with work stress and why she has difficulty interacting with coworkers and supervisors. And that point right there, which is why in my brief in support, I outlined in detail the findings associated with the DSM-5 as to what a personality disorder is, why that was so important. I'm not a medical doctor, nor am I a psychologist or a psychiatrist, and I know the court probably is not either. That's the problem we have in this case. And when we've had this going on for this long and we've already ordered consultative examinations, we had an ME who never was brought in by Judge Messina to testify but never asked to opine on specifics about stress or interaction. I mean, it just begs, why wasn't this addressed? And the only reason I can come up with is because the ALJs didn't want the answer. Because, you know, we're talking about four different ALJs and I believe five decisions. And they wanted to uphold what was going on, which is a denial.
Now, Mr. Duncan, why couldn't the ALJ reasonably infer that if she's able to cooperate with her medical providers, she can also cooperate with prospective coworkers and supervisors?
Because in a treatment situation, it's a different situation completely than when you're in a work environment dealing with supervisors who are criticizing you. You're not, or correcting you. I cited the Morales decision from the Third Circuit where they specifically said that treatment is much different than being in a work environment. This court has said repeated times that daily activities have to be taken into account versus outside versus inside a work environment. And I think that's the biggest problem with this is that we just don't have enough here to say that her treatment or being cooperative with treatment providers was going to show that she had ability to deal with supervisors. I mean, it's unrefuted testimony that she said if she was criticized, she would walk off the job. That's in the area of record 1982 to 86, where she testifies to those difficulties. So that's the problem we have. I mean, in and of itself, the judge provided reasons, okay? I dispute as to the validity of some of those reasons, but there are problems with those reasons. And then take it into account that you're supposed to give greater weight to a source who is actually examining the claimant, there's just not enough evidence here to justify the discounting of Dr. Manos on this record. So I am out of time, and I will rest that this argument and my briefs.
Thank you. Ms., is it Kuschuk?
Kuschuk, yes.
Okay, you may proceed.
May it please the court, my name is Jane Kuschuk, and I represent the Acting Commissioner of the Social Security Administration. Before diving into my argument, I'd like to address just a couple points that Mr. Duncan made. First, Ms. Diaz does not have a diagnosis of borderline personality disorder. I think Dr. Manos and maybe one other provider suggested it's possible she had it, but it was never a diagnosed impairment. And if it's not a medically determinable impairment, ALJs cannot consider it.
So but what's the line you're drawing there between, I mean, a number of people do talk about borderline personality disorder. So you're looking for a piece of paper or a statement. I have decided, you know, Ms. Diaz has borderline personality disorder, period. I mean, pretty clear in the record that they think that's a problem.
It is suspected, it's not really relevant what her diagnoses are, because as long as she has a medically determinable impairment that could cause her alleged symptoms, ALJs go on to consider the effect of those symptoms. So,
regardless of the fact that she's displaying lots of symptoms of borderline personality disorder at the stage you're talking about, would be enough. You know, the ALJ would need to take that into account.
The symptoms, yes, and so the ALJ would assess what the record says about how she's functioning, regardless of what's causing the symptoms. And another point I just like to address that Mr. Duncan made about the medical expert in 2018, she did address Dr. Manos' opinion at page 992 of the record. She stated that she disagreed with Dr. Manos' opinion because it was based on subjective allegations that were not corroborated.
But you see, that's gobbledygook when it comes to a psychiatrist or a psychologist. Dr. Manos was a psychologist. First of all, he's reporting visible things, tearfulness, distress, irritability. I don't know how any psychologist is supposed to evaluate objectively whether someone's hearing voices. It seems to me that's a self-report inherently. You can't get into their head. And you have quite a bit of evidence about her daily activities, which are largely done by her daughter. I mean, there's a lot of external evidence that corroborates what this psychologist is seeing in this person. You wouldn't say that bipolar disorder is undiagnosable, would you?
No, she certainly has medically determinable mental impairments. That's not in dispute. The dispute is whether the ALJ reasonably evaluated Dr. Manos' opinion. And she did. She followed the regulations by reviewing all of the evidence, most of which Dr. Manos did not see. And she explained over 3.5 pages why she determined that the evidence in this case did not support his opinion, and some of it was inconsistent with his opinion.
Well, that's right. So we're evaluating that, but I mean, she does need to engage with what Dr. Manos thought the impairments were. And then it's the ALJ's job to say, okay, given this set of impairments, what can you do?
Yes, and she did. She evaluated the subjective allegations that Dr. Manos relied on. So she determined the opinion. Well, let me back up. Ms. Diaz's argument basically boils down to a demand that ALJs give blind deference to consultative examiners. However, that's not what the law says. The law places
but
the burden.
It is a pretty extraordinary situation, isn't it, when an agency is seeking to discount the opinion of its own expert?
Consultative examiners are independent examiners who evaluate claimants on at one time.
But and the point is, but I think Judge Rovner's point is that they are not, for example, a treating physician who may have developed a long-term relationship with a patient who might want to be helping. They're just people who come in from the outside, solicited by the agency, and perform an examination and report back.
Yes, they issue an opinion, but the law requires ALJs to critically assess medical opinions and not just accept them blindly. And that's what the ALJ did here. She found the opinion was unsupported. Ms. Diaz argues it was supported because she relied on subjective allegations. And subjective allegations are certainly an important piece of evidence, but it's only one category of evidence that ALJs are tasked with considering. Just as with medical opinions, ALJs are tasked with critically assessing subjective allegations. Is it consistent with the record? And the ALJ reasonably concluded here that it was not. Dr. Manos rested his opinion on subjective allegations. However,
but what other allegations would support this diagnosis? I mean, it sounds to me like the commissioner is saying this is just not a basis for Social Security benefits, period. Let's stop talking about mental illness.
Well, the record thoroughly reviewed her mental illness. The ALJ noted that subjective allegations were not a reasonable or reliable foundation for Dr. Manos' opinion in this case, because the subjective allegations she presented to Dr. Manos were inconsistent with the subjective allegations she gave to treating providers at the same time. In July 2010, she started treating with primary care provider Dr. Winner. Dr. Winner's notes indicate that Ms. Diaz was taking her medication, that her bipolar symptoms were controlled, and she saw Dr. Winner 7 times between July 2010 and January 2011. And at no point during that period did Ms. Diaz ever report having any problems with mental health. And yet, in the middle of this period, when she was treating with Dr. Winners and not telling Dr. Winners about any of her symptoms, she came in October 2010, told Dr. Manos something very different. She said that her mental health symptoms were so bad that she was hardly functioning during the day, that she was sleeping, that she was spending her time staring out the window, that she was having thoughts of cutting herself. But the ALJ reasonably determined that if that was the case, if her subjective allegations were that bad, she would have at least told her treating provider about that, because her treating provider was the one in the position who could help her, not Dr. Manos.
Does anybody ask her why she didn't? I mean, you know, it seems to me, you know, if I go see, a neurologist, I might not be discussing gynecological problems with the neurologist. People are seeking out care from the right specialist.
Yes, they had that discussion at several of her hearings. As she testified, the evidence was inconsistent with when she did or did not have her medications available. She told Dr. Manos that she had stopped taking medication in April 2010 because of a loss of insurance, and the ALJ acknowledged that. However, in July 2010, we have Dr. Winner's notes indicating she was still taking her medication at that point. And in January 2013, she testified that
she had taken... Did he specify what medication and how much of it, or just taking medication?
She consistently told Dr. Ice, her treating psychiatrist from 2006 to 2010, that she did well on Lamictal, Geodin, Seroquel, I think Wellbutrin. And most of the time, as long as she was taking that medication, she reported doing very well. And so we have this brief period where she wasn't...
But even then, she's having faint, you know, these hallucinations, faint auditory hallucinations. It's an odd thing, but people seem to be able to get used to almost anything. But... It's
and
still
she reported,
someone who hears voices. Wow.
She reported that her hallucinations were controlled with medication, And later she testified that even when she stopped taking that medication, her hallucinations never returned. She was, even if we take at face value her subjective allegations that she presented to Dr. Manos, it only represents a very brief period of functioning. During this 10-year period at issue, the vast majority of the time she had insurance and access to mental health insurance, mental health treatment. So this was a brief worsening that did not represent her typical functioning, and the ALJ understood that. I see I'm about out of time, so I will, if the court has no other questions, I will rest on my brief.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Duncan, you had used all your time, but I'll give you some extra time if you have something briefly to say in rebuttal.
Yes, thank you. I'll just make three very brief points. One is the situation is yes, she improved, but she also was not working and in control of her environment and activities. There's nothing to say that if she went back into the workforce, as I think even Dr. Manos had indicated in his opinion, that this was not likely to change. I mean, if we do not take such things into consideration, we're going to have people yo-yoing off on and off benefits depending on whether they're forced to work or not. Second point that I would like to make is again, the ALJ relied on these mental status examinations that were done with her general practitioner, with her foot doctor, et cetera. They're not to the same level that a mental health expert would. And finally, one of the reasons that the ALJ cited was the lack of structured treatment, which implies inpatient. And apparently, and I've yet to find the regulation, but I have a lot of administrative law judges who imply that unless you're inpatient, your mental health is never serious enough to be on disability. That's just not the case. You do not need to be a danger to yourself or others in order to qualify. The question is whether it impacts your ability to work, and in this case, it does.
Thank you very much. Our thanks to both counsel. The case is taken under advisement.